And the United States wins the Solheim Cup for the first time since 2017. Lilia Vu with that putt.
The Europeans put up quite a battle in the Sunday singles, but that short putt at 18 by Lilia Vu indeed clinched the first Solheim Cup triumph for the Americans since 2017. Thank you to NBC Sports for that audio, and welcome to a special roundtable recap of the 19th Solheim Cup here on Musings on Golf. My name is Kelly Elbin, along with my co-host Bob Bupka, and we are delighted to be joined by Tom Abbott, who was front and center for NBC Sports and Golf Channel in calling the drama outside of our nation's capital at Robert Trent Jones Golf Club. Tom, welcome. Hey, what a thrilling 3 days of golf at the Solheim Cup.
Yeah, great to be with you. I'm glad we could make this happen. Yeah, it was really it was a great spectacle, wasn't it? 3 days of head-to-head match play that we don't get to see very often, only every so often in terms of the international competitions. And I thought that the players put on a wonderful show on a golf course that was presented in immaculate condition, and the weather cooperated. And I actually flew through Washington, the Washington area yesterday. And so 2 days after the Solheim Cup, and it was pouring with rain. So I get those three sunny days with warm temperatures on a great golf course with players playing their hearts out. It was a really, really good event.
Hey, Tom, Bob Bupka here, and thanks for joining us on Musings. And I've been dying to ask you this question. It seems like your job is to be informative and entertaining at the same time. How do you do that?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. A legend of the broadcasting world saying that means a lot. But that's basically what I try to do. I don't want to overload people with too much information. But at the same time, I think you have to tell people things that they don't know or they're not necessarily thinking about at the time, and try to be somewhat humorous, but not try to be a comedian, you know? And so I've always sort of taken that philosophy, and sometimes it works. Hopefully most of the time it works, and sometimes it doesn't. But you know, I think when people are watching these events on NBC and Golf Channel that I'm involved in, you want to give them a nice listen, and you know, they're watching because they want to switch off and be engaged in sports and not necessarily worry about other things that are going on in their life or their world. And you know, we try to give them a bit of a soundtrack to that.
Well, you certainly do it in fine fashion. The sight of this year's Solheim Cup brings back one real great memory, and I want to share that with you, Tom. I was down there for the President's Cup. I was standing on the first tee with Mike in hand and, you know, Gary Player representing the international squad was there. Jack Nicklaus for the American squad. Past President Clinton was on the grounds. And all of a sudden, I look up and I see that I'm standing next to President Bush. And obviously, I became extremely nervous. I said, boy, oh, boy. And all of a sudden, Tom, I feel this little tap in my ribs. And I look, and it's President Bush. And he says, Bob, isn't this a name dropper's paradise? I said, Mr. President, if you think it's a name dropper's paradise, what do you think I feel? I mean, it's a moment in time I certainly never will forget. And I don't think anybody will forget how this Solheim Cup played. Stacey Lewis just doing an outstanding job. And it seemed like right from the start, she was ready to get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, I think after what happened in Spain 2 years ago at the Solheim Cup at Finca Cortesín, where it was a tie, but the Europeans had the cup, so they retained it, and they celebrated like it was a win. I think, you know, Stacey knew that she had to come back to the U.S. and get a victory. You know, as you mentioned a little earlier, 2017 was the last time that the Americans won. it was getting to a point where the Americans needed to get this cut back. And so I think that was a big focus for Stacey, to use the analytics to her advantage, but also to put a team together that she really felt would gel away from the golf course and get on very well, which I think they did. And you had a different dynamic than they had in Spain, because the players were traveling in every morning on a bus together and traveling back another 45 minutes in the evening to the team hotel. Whereas in Spain, they all stayed on site. So it was a little bit different. So, you know, she learned some things that she had seen in Spain. She felt like she put too much emphasis into the foursomes play and didn't really concentrate on four ball play as much. So there was, you know, there was sort of equal weight in figuring out the teams on both sides. And then, you know, working on this team dynamic, they were going to spend all this time together, and more so than they had in Spain. And so she got it right. And the players cooperated and they played well and they putted well, which I think, as you know, a lot of these competitions comes down to putting. And some of that is because players are comfortable and they're confident.
Yeah, good point. Let me ask you this, Tom. What about analytics? It seems to be the wave of the future. Are we going to see more of that or less of that?
I think we're going to see more of it. I mean, I'm not a massive stats guy myself, but, you know, some of my colleagues very much are, and they're very into the analytics and the stats. I think we're going to see more and more of it. I think the players are going to dive more and more into it with specialists that are studying the stats and telling them, you know, where they are going wrong and what they need to work on. And also, as we've seen in the golf swing, with the advent of technology within the golf swing and video analysis and TrackMan, the data, it's more and more becoming a science. And I think we see that in the makeup of players. I mean, they're so much fitter than they were 30 or 40 years ago. They're focused on being athletes. It's nutrition, it's working out, it's mental game. And I think it has changed the game in the way it's played, along with technology that comes with the equipment. And all of that has come together to make up the modern day professional. And I think that will continue. And it obviously bleeds over into the Solheim Cup with what Stacey is doing. But I don't think that you can ever replace a great leader and somebody that players want to play for and knows how to motivate them. You know, you can have all the analytics in the world, but if you've got somebody who is really a great leader, then you're going to play your heart out. I mean, I think that's the same in many businesses, not just sports. But I think in this instance, you had kind of a bit of both. I think players really respect Stacey Lewis for what she's done on the golf course, having a family and being a player and, you know, getting married and having that life away from golf, but at the same time being this very focus-driven pro and then working all of the analytics in. I think that comes together in a crescendo that we saw there with the players playing very well on home soil.
Now, beautifully put, Tom. Tom Abbott from NBC Sports and Golf Channel joining us here on a roundtable recap of the Solheim Cup, similar to what we did here throughout the majors on the men's side in 2024. Tom, take that a step further. You mentioned about Stacey as a leader. We had her on, Bob and I interviewed her earlier this year, really came away impressed from that interview. In terms of her leadership style/skills, what are they? What makes her that leader that players respect, glom to, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I think Stacey's very intelligent. You know, I think she's a smart person and I think she is a good thinker. She has vision. I mean, she's passionate about not only the Solheim Cup, but the tour itself. And she has been instrumental in bringing some sponsors to the tour. KPMG, I would say, would be her finest hour in helping to create the modern day KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Mm-hmm. And people have talked about Stacey Lewis's potential, you know, a commissioner down the line in her future, because she's into that side of it. I think it's very dangerous sometimes to let the players run the league. I think that can get you into some trouble. And I think we've seen that a little bit on the PGA Tour side of things, you know, that I think some of the issues on the PGA Tour side of things, because the players are very passionate about what's happening with LIV and the PGA Tour and trying to take control. And it's been very difficult there, I think, on the men's side of things. So I don't always think that the players should be running a league, but I think with Stacey Lewis, she is somebody who seems to get it, and she seems to figure out the business side of it and the playing side of it. And I think when you look at her and what she has done in her career, you know, part of her legacy is bringing some of these sponsors to the tour and that being a great success. And so I think when people look at her as a leader, they have a lot of respect for her, because she's a good player and she's been able to help the tour in other ways. And then when you look at having a family, you know, it's very difficult on the LPGA tour for people to get married and meet people and have successful relationships in that way, because they're traveling all the time. It's a very, very different environment. So I think when you see a player who meets somebody, has a family, and is still able to play and compete, then there is a respect level there, because that's a very difficult thing to do on the LPGA tour. So, you know, I think when you look at all of those factors goes into making Stacey a good leader.
And Bob, I want to get your perspective. I mentioned that interview that we conducted with Stacey. Both of us came away, as I said, very impressed. And both of us felt really good about the U.S. chances going into the Solheim Cup. What is it about her that you see as sort of an extension of what Tom hit on?
Well, I've known Stacey a long time, and she did grace us with her presence on Musings on Golf, and I came away even more impressed. What I'd like to find out from Tom, it's probably an unfair question, but is there any differences, or what's the biggest difference between the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a different product. I think the Solheim Cup is a lot more family friendly. And one of the things that I didn't see as much in Italy, the last Solheim Cup in Rome, were young people, children. You know, it's a very much more an adult environment, and outside of the ropes. I think the Solheim Cup is a way more family-friendly environment. And whether that's good or bad, it depends on your take. I think if you compare, and this may be a bit of an anomaly, but if you compare what we're going to see in New York next year at the Ryder Cup to, say, Saturday afternoon at RTJ, I think it's a very, very different environment. And you know, the Solheim Cup to me is a lot more family friendly, a lot more youngsters out there, especially young girls and women who, you know, who are obviously looking up to these players. And I think that's it's a very different product, and both of them can coexist. You know, I think a lot of people obviously love going to a Ryder Cup, but it's a very different atmosphere. I think for me, playing on that family-friendly environment is not a bad thing for the LPGA Tour. You know, I think if you have kids and you're looking to take them to a sporting event, an LPGA event or the Solheim Cup is a great place to go. Hmm. You know, going to other sporting events, you may think, actually, no, I don't want my children in that environment. And that's totally, totally fine, right? I mean, that each to their own. But I think with the Solheim Cup, it really is very family friendly and very comfortable environment, and I think it's a nice thing to do, and very nice to go out and watch golf and enjoy a lovely day out.
So the three of us have talked quite a bit now about Stacey Lewis. Let's hear what she thought the difference was of coming up with a tie last year but getting the victory at RTJ last week.
They needed to have fun and they needed to enjoy this, and they needed to do that but also play good golf. And I think there was just a lot of tension of trying to play perfect golf and not enjoying it in the process. And this team enjoyed this week more than the golf itself. You know, they had so much fun together. They did whatever I asked of them. They were great. I mean, I can't say enough about them. All 12 of them, they played so hard, and it got hard at times, you know, and we knew it would get tough, and just crazy how this thing, it doesn't matter what your lead is coming into Sunday. It's half points matter, half points here and there. And just proud of those, you know, that got those matches to 18 and were able to get those half points.
We'll be right back with our conversation with Tom Abbott and our Solheim Cup recap right after these messages from our partners.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist is the number one ball in golf. Yes, being number one is a number, and more players trust the Pro V1 or Pro V1X than all other golf balls combined. But being number one is more than a number. It's a mindset. It's a relentless mission to design and manufacture the best performing golf balls in the game, so you can chase whatever your number one is. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. Bob, you've worked enough of these major international events, and that intangible she's talking about, that camaraderie, that getting along with the other 11 on your team. It's humongous when it comes to an event like this, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And to be able to be brought together to the magnitude that Stacy was able to accomplish is truly remarkable. But she's a remarkable person. So A remarkable person as a Solheim captain is going to do remarkable things. It was close at the end, but the United States certainly prevailed, and a victory they really needed. But hats off to the European side. I mean, they played extremely well under tough conditions. I congratulate Europe, but I certainly am celebrating the amazing accomplishment of our Solheim Cup team.
Bob and I are so pleased to be joined by Tom Abbott of NBC Sports and Golf Channel, who covered the Solheim Cup last week outside of Washington. How about this for a fun fact about Tom Abbott, Mr. Pupka? He is the youngest person in U.S. television history to broadcast the Ryder Cup, the Solheim Cup, the Walker Cup, and the President's Cup. Now, that's a pretty good foursome.
That is an amazing foursome. But it doesn't surprise me when you attach the name Tom Abbott. I've known of Tom for quite a while. I've marveled at his work, his intelligence, and the nice way he delivers his stuff. It's it's like he's ground up our food and made it easier to taste. There's nothing tough about Tom Abbott, and he's been a superstar for a long time. He's somebody that I truly admire, and to have broadcast all of those and to put him with probably, and I think Tom will agree with this, the most versatile man in TV, and Terry Gannon, I mean, Terry Gannon does ice skating. Terry Gannon does Solheim Cup. Terry Gannon does Ryder Cup. I mean, it's really incredible, his versatility. Now, you put that team together, Terry Gannon, Tom Abbott, boy, you got a blockbuster.
Well, thank Tom, you. That's very kind, yeah.
Tom, your work Olympics-wise has gone outside of the purview of golf, right? Did you do some judo, or what did you do?
I did biathlon, actually, in the last Olympics in China.
How did that happen? Yeah. Why biathlon?
Well, good question. I think they needed somebody to do biathlon, and my name came. I don't know how my name came up, but I went to China. I didn't actually think I was going to go to China, but they called me and said, we need you to do biathlon. I assumed I was going to be doing it from Stamford, Connecticut, where we do a lot of broadcasting during the Olympics. And they said, no, we need you to go to China. And it was, you know, it was very interesting because I got to see the real inner workings of another sport that is a niche, you know, it's kind of a fringe sport, but the athletes are so passionate about it. They're not making any money. You know, a lot of them have, well, most of them have other jobs, so they're in the military or they're, you know, teaching or, you know, so this is a very different environment than golf. But they were amazing athletes, and to combine cross-country skiing and shooting and to be skilled in both of those, they're two very different disciplines, right? So when they come together in the biathlon, it's fascinating to watch, actually. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I hope I get to do it again. I'm not sure if I will in Milan and Cortina in a couple of years, but a year and a half, yeah. But who knows? I would love to do it again. It was great.
Oh, it's very, very interesting. Before we get into the play of individual players, and there was some stellar play over the 3 days, we mentioned about the four big events in golf that you reported on. And I'm wondering, from a preparation standpoint, what's it like for you preparing for these huge events as opposed to, say, a weekly event on the LPGA Tour? Do you get the butterflies a little bit? Do you get a little nerves when you know that you're going to be speaking to such a much bigger audience at a, you know, let's be honest, a much, much bigger event like the Solheim Cup?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is when we do those team events, you don't have to do as much research because, I mean, you have to have a view of what's going on, kind of an overall view. But the golf really speaks for itself during those match play events. You're really focused in on what is happening now and what has just happened. So a lot of the announcing in those events is updating the viewer on what is going on in the match and staying out of getting too into the weeds on stats and information, because it's really right there in front of you. In terms of the nerves, I usually only will get nervous if I'm doing something for the first time or if you're speaking in front of an audience that you're seeing. I think when you're doing broadcasting and it's only a couple of you, I mean, I think we had about five or six people in total in our broadcast booth, along with Karen Supples, Judy Rankin, Terry Gannon. And then we had three folks that work with us there, Brian Harrison and Greg in the booth helping us out. And so there's seven of us total in that broadcast booth. So you're really just talking to a screen, and I don't really get nervous in that respect. You know that you have to be careful with what you're saying. One slip up, one phrase, one word could end your career or get you in trouble or get other people in trouble. So it's, you know, you got to be careful. But I would say it's much more nerve-wracking standing up in front of 1,000 people hosting an event or doing a Q&A in front of an audience than broadcasting to millions of people.
Bob, I want to start with you on this as we kind of delve into the individual play. So for only the second time in Solheim Cup history, the U.S. had four players go undefeated. Rose Zhang clearly leading the way, 4-0-0 record, 1 year after she finished 0-2-1 in Spain. So quite a rebound. Bob, my sense is this could be the start of many years of outstanding play for Rose Zhang and some of the other players, at least on the U.S. side. I want to get to the Europeans, certainly, but on the U.S. side in the Solheim Cup.
Yeah, but I have a little bit of a different opinion, Kelly, in that, you know, they did well and they won the cup. But 2 years from now, that slate gets wiped clean. They don't get any credit for winning the cup. They got to go and do it again. And that's where the hard thing comes in, especially, I think, maybe a little harder after you won, even though you would think that, well, it'd be easier because they did win the last time out. I think it's a little harder because you want to try and do the exact same thing, but that doesn't work in, you know, cup competition. You're going to have to find a different method in getting it done. And I think that's what makes the playing of the Solheim Cup so beautiful. And I must say thank you to Carsten Solheim, who started all of this. I knew Carsten very well. He was the ultimate gentleman and loved the sport of golf and has done so much for the LPGA. You can't say enough about Carsten Solheim.
Yeah, the legacy of Sam Ryder with the Ryder Cup way back when, and clearly with Mr. Solheim and what he's done. Following up on those thoughts, Tom, that slate being wiped clean, if you will, what are your thoughts on that? Because 26, Solheim goes for the first time to the Netherlands, an entirely different landscape than the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it will be very different. A golf course that we really don't know too much about. They've played the KLM Open, the Dutch Open, on the DP World Tour there. But it's not, it's a golf course, I think it's only 6 years old. So it's, and it's an interesting place because it's a public facility where you pay a fee and you sort of are a member for the day. And it's supposed to be incredible. I've not been there, but it's supposed to be in really good shape and with great facilities. And it's kind of a public facility and a different way of doing it. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that slate does get wiped clean. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how these players perform over the next couple of years. And with Rose Zhang, I think it's going to be hunger. You know, how much does she want to do this? With Nelly Korda, she loves playing golf. She loves it. I don't think she loves being in the spotlight that much, but she really loves playing golf. With Rose, we have to see, you know, if she wants to have a career for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, what does she want to achieve? You know, she's done so much so young. And does she want to continue that into professional golf and continue, you know, become one of the real great, which she has the potential to do? So the next several years are going to be very interesting for someone like Rose, but also for Nelly and Lauren Coughlin or whoever's going to come along and be the next great player. We really don't know. It changes so quickly on the LPGA Tour in terms of stars that somebody else could come along who we really haven't had on our radar. They could be in the team in 2 years as a very, you know, as a top player.
Tom, you had Meghan Keane go 3-0-0 for the second straight Solheim Cup. You mentioned Lauren Coughlin, 3-0-1 at Robert Trent Jones, and Andrea Lee was 2-0-1. Of those three, did any of those stand out for you, I didn't see that one coming. That was really impressive. They played a lot better than maybe I thought they would.
I think Andrea Lee, you know, on that specific question, I think Andrea played really well and was comfortable and seemed to enjoy, to relish being in that situation. Meghan Keane is just, she's such a character, and I think she gets along well with people, and she's very, very popular in the team room, and she's got a great backstory. She comes from humble beginnings and she appreciates where she is. And I think a lot of people have a lot of time for Meghan Keane and for what she's created. And she loves being in the Northeast, right? She's a Boston girl through and through, and she loves living up in that area, and she's kind of, you know, that's her spot, which isn't always easy for a, you know, for a professional golfer. But and then Lauren Coughlin, I think we expected her to go well because of the way that she's been playing recently and having those two wins and having this breakout season. I think if she hadn't done that and then she'd performed like she did, then I think it would have been a big surprise. But I think Lauren Coughlin is just a really good feel-good story of somebody who, if you just work hard and you're determined and you're professional, you can achieve those goals. And I think that's what she has done. But in answer to your original question, I think Andrea Lee would be my pick. And the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup, we often see players perform and then have a bounce on the back of that. And I think we might see that in the next, you know, the LPGA still has a couple of months left on the tour. It's not the same schedule as the PGA Tour, you know, the tour championship, the CME Group Tour Championship for the LPGA is the week before Thanksgiving. So they still have a lot of golf left to play. So you can get those players who get that bounce, you know, they get that confidence from playing in front of the huge crowds and playing on this big stage and handling the pressure. And I think we will probably see that a little bit over the coming weeks.
Bob, for the Europeans, Charlie Hull went 3-2 overall. Really a dominating performance in beating Nelly Korda, 6-4, whatever it was, in the singles. Now you had five other players, Madeline Sagstrom, Celine Boutier, Georgia Hall, Anna Nordqvist, and Emily Pettersson, each won 2 points. Charlie Hull seems like, Bob, she's become the face of the women's game on the international side. Just seems to be getting better and better and more confident, if that's possible.
Yeah, she really demonstrates. She demonstrates a love of the game, and she demonstrates playing at her best when the best is the only thing that would work. And you got to give her a lot of credit. I want to ask Tom one question, though. You know, Tom, you work so hard at what you do to deliver a fantastic package. What aspect of what you do is the most fun for you?
Well, good question. I mean, I think for me, it's the big events, like being involved in the big events in terms of working, in terms of the work, you know, being involved in the Ryder Cup and major championships and being on the call there when history is being made. That to me is the most fun. And then secondly, I'd say it's the travel and seeing new places and experiencing different environments. And, you know, I'm going to Zozo, the Zozo Championship in a few weeks time in Japan, and, you know, going there, it's, I've done it a couple of times, and, you know, you're 1 week you're in the US in Cincinnati or Arkansas, and the next week, you know, you're in Narita City and eating at local restaurants, and it's completely different. So I think those two things would be my favorite part of the job. But, you know, and your comment about Charlie Hull, I think when you looked at that match between Charlie and Nelly, there were players that really love playing golf, but I think Charlie relishes the spotlight and embraces it. And I think she kind of, it brings out the best in her. And she is such a funny character, and she's very down to earth. She's not pretentious. She is who she is. And if you have a conversation with her, she's funny. I mean, she's just naturally very funny, you know, with the way that she carries herself and the things that she says. And, you know, she almost made a slip up in her interview. And I think if she had made a slip up and, you know, said she had to play her whatever off, then it would have been fine. People would laugh at that. And I think that's kind of her character. And, you know, on the European side of things, I think there were a couple of players. Lynn Grant was the one disappointment for me. Yeah. If she had played better and played up to her potential, you know, the Europeans could have really been in it at the end. You never really want to lay blame on anybody at all. And that's certainly not what I'm doing with Lynn, but I was very surprised with the way that she played.
You mentioned about kind of embracing the spotlight. I can still remember the 2012 Ryder Cup outside of Chicago and Bubba Watson, you know, having the spectators, encouraging them to yell and scream while he was teeing off, as opposed to the quiet that's always what you expect in golf. And it showed he was excited about the, you know, the moment, et cetera. Tom, I guess that there's a lot that can be said about that, isn't there, in embracing the moment and feeling comfortable at such big events where, boy, the tension and the pressure can be so heavy when you're representing your continent or whether you're representing your country.
Yeah, I mean, that first tee environment, I was down there Friday and Saturday morning, and which is nice for me because I'm usually in the announce booth and I don't get to go down and actually be right in the action. But I was out on the ground on Friday and Saturday mornings. And that's total silence is the same. Yeah, you can imagine why players want the noise, because the silence is worse. Just standing there where everyone is focused on you, and the nerves are off the charts. So I can see why they want that energy And players are going to hit it 10 or 15 yards longer off the first tee anyway, and maybe even more when they've got that noise because they're so pumped up. But I think, you know, this players want to play in this in the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup because there's absolutely nothing like it. And they don't get paid. It's one of the only things they do where they're not getting compensated directly for the play, but there's nothing quite like it. And you can't buy that place on the team. And they want to be there in the cauldron of it. And it's the Olympics may get there eventually. You know, players, it's the same situation for players, although they do get compensated for a medal by their national Olympic federations. But they're basically playing for pride in their country. And I think, and having that environment and that pressure and being in the spotlight is what the true athletes absolutely love.
We'll be right back with more Musings on Golf after a quick word from William and Harry.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Bob, you mentioned earlier, you asked Tom about Ryder Cup versus Solheim Cup. What's your feeling on that? Is one more intense than the other? Do you have a feel for that? I mean, you and I go way back and having worked a lot of Ryder Cups, how do the two compare from your perspective?
Well, in a form of exaggeration, and I'm really exaggerating here when I say this, the Solheim Cup is like going to watch a badminton match, and the Ryder Cup is like going to watch a bullfight. I mean, and they're completely different, but universally the same because it's all around golf.
Hey, Tom, tell me a little bit about, you grew up outside of London, played a lot of golf. You ended up at Mercer University, Macon, Georgia. You're actually in the Mercer Athletic Hall of Fame. How did Mercer University come to be for a kid from the suburbs of London?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a connection that you'd always make there. But I had met a family that I was that lived in Macon, Georgia when we were on a family vacation, and we met this family from Macon, Georgia. And when I was looking at playing golf in college, I had stayed in touch with them, and they suggested that I should look at Mercer. And so if the Maurice and Sharon Purcell were the names, obviously I'm still close with them, and they lived in Macon, and that was the connection. They said, oh, you know, come and stay with us and look at Mercer, and I did, and they offered me a scholarship, and that was it. And then I was off to Macon, and I was there for 4 years, and that's when I got into broadcasting. And I worked for a year out in Charlottesville, Virginia, actually about an hour and a half away from RTJ, and then went to Golf Channel.
Two final questions for me. The big break, the show, really was, sounds like in a lot of ways, your big break in terms of landing at Golf Channel, being known, being seen with that series that ran for a good number of years. How did you get that gig, if you will? How did it end up that Tom Abbott was a co-host of the big break?
Yeah, there was an executive at Golf Channel by the name of Tom Stathakis who was running the production at the channel at the time. And Vince Cellini, I think, had left the network, and he was the host. And there was a spot open, and Tom Stathakis said, well, let's give Abbott a shot. You know, maybe he'll be good. And that was it. And I got a call, and they said, would you want to host? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And so I went off and hosted. And the first one that I did was in the Bahamas at a Sandals resort. that subsequently was right next to the Fyre Festival that was a total disaster. I don't know if you remember that. It was a good documentary about it, but that's not connected. But it was right there in the Bahamas, and I hosted with Stephanie Sparks, and you know, very sadly Stephanie passed away early this year. But you know, we worked a number of big breaks together, and that was it. I kept doing it right until the end.
Tom, final question for me, and it's been a real pleasure for me to ask this of our guests. If you could play a dream round of golf with three others, whether they're living or no longer with us, who would those three be, and where would you play that special round?
Well, I think I would have to play Augusta National, because I've never played Augusta National. So I think I would have to play there. I think I would have to include my father to play, who is still alive, and because that would just be the icing on the cake for him. I think he might have to play the four tees, but he would be on the list. And then I think Tiger Woods, because he's the, you know, I grew up in that era of Tiger, and he would, just being able to play golf with him, even though his golf is, I think maybe playing with him in his heyday would be, you know, if I could play with Tiger and take the Tiger from his heyday rather than maybe today when he's got some struggles. And then I think one of my great friends that I started playing the game with, a guy named Adam G, who is still a very close friend of mine. And Adam went on to play on the DP World Tour, and he lost in the final of the British Amateur. So he was one spot away from playing in the Masters. And so I would, I think that would be my four ball. And I think if we had a reserve, it would probably be a guy that I played a lot of golf with when I was growing up, a guy called Michael Lunt, who was who was an amateur champion, played in the Walker Cup four times, and was the captain of the RNA when he passed away about 15 or 16 years ago. And I used to play with him once a month at Walton Heath, and he was just an absolute gentleman and a great amateur player. And I always have very, very fond memories of playing with him. And he got six invitations to play in the Masters and didn't take any of them. And back in those days, in the 50s and 60s, it wasn't quite what it was today, the Masters. And so, you know, we always think of events in the context of today, but you know, when you think of in the past, he did go subsequently as an invitee to attend, as an attendee, but not to play in the tournament. And to give you an example of that, at the Ryder Cup was at my home club of Walton Heath in 1981. And several years prior to that, there was a committee meeting, and there's still a gentleman alive today, Philip Truitt, who was on the committee. And in the meeting, the secretary who was running the committee meeting said, "Oh, we've had a request to have the Ryder Cup. Does anybody object? Okay, let's move on." And that was how they got the Ryder Cup in the late 70s. So, you know,
that was it.
That was like, yeah, we're getting the Ryder Cup. You know, today it's a massive multi-million dollar operation, and it's planned out, and so things really change, don't they, over time? And we look at events in today's perspective rather than what they were in the past. But yeah, anyway, that's a long, long answer to a simple question. But that would be my group.
Fantastic stuff. Mr. Bupka, I know you'd like to say a final word to Tom Abbott.
I don't want to say a final word because I've enjoyed our conversation with him. He's somebody that I've truly admired. He's a professional. That's all I have to say. Tom Abbott is a professional broadcaster, and coming from my world, that's the highest compliment I can give. Hey, thanks for your time, Tom. Always good to get together with you.
I really appreciate it, and thank you for the kind words. That means a lot, and I'm really glad that we could find the time to do this today.
We really appreciate Tom Abbott from Golf Channel and NBC Sports for joining us to wrap up the Solheim Cup. You can listen to the Encore podcast on our website, musingsongolf.com. Next week, Ian Baker Finch will be our special guest. For Kelly Elvin, I'm Bob Bupka. Thank you for joining us on Musings on Golf.